Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson.
Those defeats don't make him a bad coach. Those results don't make them bad players, but we're a bad team. What the hell does that mean?
Well, again, it's a coach who's protecting his players, and I think James realistically should tell it as it is. Them players quite clearly are not up to Super League, and as I mentioned last week, and I think I mentioned it the week before, these guys should be looking to play in Super League because quite clearly no other club wants them. You know, so if they want to perform and stay,
you can't say that.
No, nobody wants to.
Collis is a good player.
The reason why they're at Wakefield, nobody else wants them. Simple as that. And the way they're performing, well, if that's putting yourself in the shop window, because certainly on form, Wakefield will be playing in that £1 million game, and they're looking like relegation. So
they might not be in the £1 million game. They might already be relegated.
Well, maybe relegated before then. So. Now the players have to take, in my opinion, 95% of the way that Wakefield, the position what Wakefield Wildcats are in. Simple as that.
What was absolutely bizarre with that game? And again, you get a different perspective, I fully accept, watching it on television than if you're actually at the game. So anything that you say from the basis of your armchair isn't as valid as those that were at the match. And I was watching that game, and at half-time, we would not have been having this conversation. Wakefield was so much in control. The worry for me was that once things started to go against them, they couldn't put together back-to-back sets of six. There was absolutely no game management. They couldn't play the game in the right part of the field.
This is where I argue what Webster says. We didn't have any ball. No, you didn't have any ball because you couldn't tackle for six tackles, and you couldn't keep it for six when you had it in your possession.
Every time they attacked, even in the second half, they only had really one opportunity close to the Lee line. They scored. So to have players in that team who not only had performed quite well in the first half, but are seasoned people at getting you around the field. You know, I'm not pointing the finger specifically at somebody like Tim Smith, but he's there because of his kicking game. He's there because of his game management skills. We'll talk about other matches this weekend where no doubt there'll be some analysis of why Leeds beat Huddersfield in the way they did. It was their game management. It was bringing in people that knew when to play, where to play, how to play, where on the field to play, how to get to that part of the field. And Wakefield had done all that and then couldn't do it. And that would be my worry.
Tim Smith seemed too busy trying to goad Ryan Brearley, and Ryan Brearley's second half, Scotty. I mean, you love an half back that, you know, plays off the cuff and is willing to take chances. He's the boy, isn't he?
Absolutely. And it made me smile, certainly, the chip over the top, regathering and support player to Armstrong.
Where have we seen that before?
You know, it brings music to it. And you know, say Tim Smith's an experienced player there, and realistically, he should be outsmarting him two halfbacks, you know, with the quality of what he's supposed to be, is, and the experience what he's got. But quite clearly, Brearley and Ridyard were quality. And I said, well, Tim Smith's not getting any help from the guy at the side of him, Mr. Jacob, as I've already mentioned. But no. Wakefield are poor, and I say,
I mean,
Webster's going to lose his
job. You don't want to pick out individuals.
Phil, we've got to do.
There was a point in the second half where a ball was kicked towards the Wakefield line, and Craig Hall was incredibly slow to react to it. And instead of picking up the ball and being in the field of play, they're almost already giving away a dropout. And that, when a team is already under pressure, puts them under even more pressure. Now, the game didn't change on that incident. That's not a direct criticism of Craig Hall. But when senior professionals, it's not like it's his first game. You know, when senior guys don't take charge of the situation, then that's where you would have a worry. Now, I don't know how much further a coach can go with that group of players, whether there is now a trust issue. Because once you go public and say, you know, I have doubts about these players.
All right, then. Well, we're going to jump ahead. We're going to hear in a bit from Daryl Powell. Daryl Powell came out and said to us here on Radio Yorkshire on Saturday afternoon that some of those players are not fit to play for Castleford and won't play for the club again.
Did he mean won't play for them again next week? Well,
he said that I've had enough. They'll not. You'll hear it in a bit. He said they won't play anymore. That's it. I've had enough. They're doing the same things every week, and they're not getting away with it. He's had enough. But is he doing that from a little bit more of a position of strength, where he can feel? He admitted some of the players that he's brought in have not done what he wanted them to do.
And he's got quite a lot out with injuries at the moment. It goes back to the fact that Wakefield were virtually from 1 to... if you accept that most coaches will give numbers 1 to 13 to the 13 players they think are their best players, only number 4 didn't play for Wakefield on Sunday. Mm. You know, there's a lot of changes that Daryl can make because he's got a large lump of his squad still to come back in. And we mentioned Daryl before that he'll always take effort. And that doesn't necessarily always equate to performance. That's where your quality aspect comes in. But twice this year, he's been upset with an attitude that his players haven't had at Salford and Widnes. I think he's now added Hull to the list. And Darrell, obviously, Castleford had a wonderful season last year getting to Wembley, and to go out at the first hurdle, relatively meekly, certainly in the last quarter, that would hurt him. And I think that's what he would be referring to. You look at some of the players in that team and you think, yeah, when the likes of maybe Luke Dawn comes back, they possibly won't be there anyway. So he can mix and match. But I'm not sure James Webster can. He's got a lot of his players that he would call his top players, may not be fully fit at the moment, available to him.
Okay, fair enough. The question on Twitter, should he go at RL on RY? We've seen another coach go today. We're going to hear from Carl Hall in a couple of minutes' time. Are we surprised, Phil, that Paul Cook's gone?
No, but it's done with such honour. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Paul Cook's statement on the Doncaster website. Mm. It is one of the most wonderful valedictory addresses I've ever read. It basically pays tribute to absolutely everybody at the club. It thanks them for how they've helped him over the last 3 years. He apologises for the fact that he couldn't bring them the kind of and he says it's all been done amicably, which doesn't happen very much in this era. It's a wonderful statement, and you get the feeling that is a club where mutual respect reigns.
I think also as well, you've got to feel sorry for Cookie this year, because he's not had the dual registration of players like he had last year, you know, to help him out at times and the quality of what he had. And I say it again, if you've not got that quality of players to perform week in and week out, as we mentioned here, certainly with James Webster at Wayford, the players, and with Darrell Power of his players, because Darrell has fought a quality, consistent performance to a certain level, and the players are just done up to it each week. But yeah, Cookie is doing an excellent job at Doncaster. There. He's not being helped out because of the quality of players he's not been having week in and week out. But I tell you what,
best quality player he had was himself.
Absolutely, yeah. So I don't think he'll be out of a job long. And if anything does happen at Wakefield pretty quickly, who's to say Cookie, you know, ready to move in there? I'm sure. I'll tell you what, he'll be up for the fight, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, we'll hear from Carl in a minute. He's speaking to Richard as we speak.
Just going back to the Wakefield game.
Hmm.
Something that was brought to the attention that I hadn't considered. Lee last week played a game against Halifax, where they had two players sent off, one sin binned. I think three at least are up before the beak.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been delayed a week.
Is
because it's a Championship fixture.
Craig and I had this discussion on air yesterday. Now, I can only imagine, and I don't know the reasons behind this, but I can only imagine it's classed as a part-time league.
But that's
There's
nonsense.
Does more notice have to be given to the players?
So Tom Armstrong, who scored one of the game-breaking tries yesterday, who is one of the people that's up there under charge, goes up this week instead of last week, gets banned, doesn't play against Featherstone at the Bash. Why is that fair on Wakefield?
No, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Is
that the reason why? I mean,
no, I think there
fair.
Are different disciplinary rules for
there
each division.
Listen, hold on here. Let's stop getting into the political thing by Lee player disciplinary wise. This is all about how bad Wakefield are. It's all about how bad Wakefield are. If Armstrong wasn't playing, somebody else would have played. That still wouldn't have changed Wakefield's attitude, you know. So, quite clearly, if we were looking to pluck at straws and stick up for Wakefield, I tell you what, Wakefield aren't getting any bonuses from me or any positives whatsoever, not at all.
What we probably do need to discuss, and I don't think there's an easy answer to this, is what difference does this make to the middle eights? Because Wakefield have said they were concentrating on they realised that their plight in Super League was such that they weren't going to salvage the season and get into the top eight, so they were already resigned themselves to the fact that that's where they would be playing, and James Webster honestly but perhaps ill-advisedly came out and said that's what we're playing towards. We want to get players back, we want to be playing somewhere near our best as we get into week 23. What do we think now, bearing in mind that if you were Bradford and you were sitting there watching that game yesterday, not involved, you'd be going, yeah, I think we can take Wakefield on the way they're playing at the moment.
Bradford did very well against Hull KR in the Cup, and for me, a couple of bounces of the balls, they could quite easily have beaten Hull KR. They got in front with 15 minutes left, they took the kick off Hull KR and it bounced about 30 yards in the air and went out It was impossible to stop. Mm. And from then, OK, I ran away.
One of the things we said was that the Super League teams in the middle eight would be better prepared because of the intensity of the competition they were playing in week in, week out. What does it say to the teams in the Championship that Wakefield haven't got the intensity to for 40-odd minutes? That's the issue now. I think Wakefield now have an extra problem in even convincing themselves that they will be ready for the middle eight.
To me, Rich, you had a team that knew how to win on Sunday and a team that knew how to lose, and that's ultimately what happened. And Paul Rowley said it after the game. He said it wasn't so much that we had the belief to win. He said Wakefield didn't have the belief not to lose.
Losing apparently is a habit, and we've become quite good at it, repeating on command.
But you had that game won at half-time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the thing.
Mark will tell you what I was saying to him down the line at half-time off-air. But
yeah, but hold on. How many games of belief do you have you ever seen over 40 minutes? You had the game won at half-time. On the scoreboard, you was winning. You didn't have the game won.
No, but
you know how many games of belief do we watch for 40 minutes?
But there was. No,
I think we're sticking up for Wakefield here, and I don't think we should.
I'm not. No chance.
I don't think we should.
No way.
I don't think we should. Them players are absolutely disgusting for that Wakefield. And do you know what? And do you know what as well? You know, a couple of little things. What you know? What I'm hearing coming out of there is that, you know, and whether it's right to say no, but I'm going to say, you know, the players couldn't care less. They just have to turn up, pick up the money, and that's it. Well, that attitude is absolutely diabolical and very, very unprofessional.
And the person it's disrespectful to more than anyone is the guy who's paying them that
absolutely
money.
Absolutely, Michael Carter.
And,
it is indeed.
And again, I know, you know, Michael will be hurting, obviously.
Without a doubt, yeah.
But he used to be quite obvious on his Twitter presence. And he's not there at the moment. And, I would imagine that this is an impossible situation to deal with for him.
Spoke to Michael before the game and he was desperate for a win. Not for his own sake.
Exactly.
For the sake of everyone.
Well, I'll tell you what would he must be... Yesterday, then, you talked about half-time, Wakefield had the game won at half. What would he must have been thinking after 40 minutes, thinking, right, here we go.
Yeah, absolutely. But what
and
about...
The last 40 minutes, he'd be thinking exactly the same as us. What are these players doing? Don't they want to play here?
They've got a really big game next week as well.
Widnes,
if they are going to make change, then you would almost think that it has to be for this game. Widnes are another team that don't travel away very well, that are in the bottom four at the moment. We know how volatile that is, but at the moment they are one of the teams that will be playing with Wakefield in that middle eight if things stay as they are. Because they've been so abject this week, Wakefield really have to do something.
Well, I tell you what, though, I'll guarantee you, Dennis Betts and them players would have been looking at the league fixture thinking, right, away from home, Wakefield, we're looking for 2 points here, without a shadow of a doubt.
Rich, you asked a question, or you've asked some questions on Twitter, at RL on RY. There's been quite a lot of response.
Yeah, apparently everyone very much in favour for James Webster not being the Wakefield coach anymore.
Anybody come up with an alternative, though?
Oh, yes.
Because it's very easy.
Are you ready for these names?
Yeah.
Go on, then.
There we go. Well,
there's mine on it.
Nigel's gone for himself. So, Nigel, I don't know if you've got your badges or whatever, but to get your CV into Bellevue.
Is it Nigel Wood?
It's Nigel Moss.
All right.
Tony Mann says Jesus. I asked if that was David Wrench, because that was his nickname back in the day, but no, he's not. It's the other one. Daz has gone for... We should keep a tally of these. Daz has gone for John Keogh. Or Glenn Morrison.
But they're at better run clubs at the moment. Not in terms of you know, Michael Carter's running of the club, but actually in terms of resource at the level that they're at better clubs.
Ian says everything's gone wrong since his fallout with Jared Sammets. I believe the players are backing their teammate, not the coach. Hilariously, he's changed his Twitter bio to from player at Wakefield Trinity to trains at Wakefield Trinity, but there you go. Niall, I reckon John Keogh might be tempted at one last crack at the big time. The big time?
What, the middle eight?
Kev says, John Keogh is the man. Jackknife, anyone who's daft enough to take it, we need change. And here's another popular name coming up. Here's Elliot. Brian Noble, come on down. Former Wakefield hooker, of course, for nine games. Philip, you know, worried that Wakefield's time might be up. Can't think of anyone who can make a difference. And why would Keogh after last time? Bradley thinks it all went downhill after Kermond went off.
Well, it did, in fairness. And you know why it went downhill? Because Lee, for me, Scoey, upped the aggression, they upped the intensity. They did it against the Bulls on the opening day of the season. They were getting battered at half time. They came out, give it a bit of biff, and all of a sudden they're on top. The steamroller.
So it's the Wakefield forwards that are the problem, not Jacob Miller.
Yeah, please. But also as well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, rugby league is a tough sport, you know, and you can get stuck in, you know, and I know for sure some of the guys I've been speaking to, you know, with Lee Crooks, and I said, listen, if you'd have been playing against Lee and they were doing that to you, what would you do? And says, yeah, they wouldn't have done it for much longer.
Anderson and
I forgot to mention the starting earlier as well.
The other starting prop, Kavanagh.
Yeah.
Brilliant. First 20 minutes. They battered everything in front of them.
Well.
But once they went off, you wonder then, is that when the intensity drops off? More tweets coming in at RL on RY. Get involved. Come on, it's your show.
Yeah, Phil Taylor. I don't think it's that one.
180.
They're coming off a play on our dartboard. He says Webster must go now, or there won't be a Wakefield next season.
You can't blame James Webster. No. You can't, honestly. Not for the lot of it. You know, should he have gone 3 or 4 weeks ago with that comment? You know, I guess he should have done. But boy, you can't just blame James Webster. Please.
You read the one out about the Sammet point of view?
Yeah.
Oh, you read that out. Is the mileage in that score? If there's a bit, you know, the lads are a bit upset about one of their mates. I don't know. Was he one of their mates? Has he been there long enough to be there, mate?
They can go to Costa with him every day if they want to, like everyone else, or Nando's. It's still there. They can still meet him socially. Just he's not in the team, does it really matter?
Would he have made a difference yesterday?
Is Jared Sammet better than Jacob Miller? Ask that question.
I'll
ask you it's going.
Without a doubt. There you go. Eh?
Phil? Is Jacob Miller better than you?
The problem is not the problem is not scoring points. The problem is defending, and defending in the middle. And whether it's Jared Sammet or Jacob Miller, if their pack is going backwards, then you are not going to be able to shine.
It's worth noting at this point, right at the beginning of the season, James Webster did express an opinion that his side was soft. Mm-hmm. He conceded a lot of points on Boxing Day at Leeds, didn't they?
They did.
And that's a problem that they've had.
He also said that he went in for a player, as did Lee, and he couldn't match what Lee's valuation for that player was.
Well, you said they can't defend. Well, I'll tell you what. They can't show any passion. They can't show any enthusiasm. They can't show any urgency. They can't show any commitment. What else are we going to say about Wakefield? You know, I hope them players are listening. I do, I hope they're listening. But to be honest with you, with what I'm hearing, what's coming out of that dressing room is that they couldn't care less, and that again is not fair.
I'm telling you,
and then I say the guy you got to feel sorry for, as Phil just said 3 minutes ago, you got to feel sorry for Michael Carter. It's as simple as that, and the supporters and the other board members.
And there's a man who some fans want out of the club because they're idiots.
Oh.
You know, let's be honest here. And I've been told that this view is simplistic. Well, if it's simplistic, tough. This is what I think is the problem. This club does not own its own ground because a previous regime sold that ground. This club is having to cut its cloth accordingly because a previous regime spent money it didn't have. That's why the club is where it is at the moment. If people want to say, oh, it's more complicated than that, those are the basic issues as to why Wakefield Trinity Wildcats Rugby League Football Club are where they are right now. Not able to spend up to the salary cap, not getting big gates, because the club has been run as a shambles. It's now run as a business. It used to be a social club. You've got the chairman dressing up and going off on fancy dress outings to London. That's not how you run a professional sports club. If you want to be a business, if you want to be a professional sports club that exists and breeds and actually is successful, run it like a business. None of this social club nonsense.
I think there's a wider issue as well about whether you spend the salary cap or not. And that we said this right at the very beginning in our preview programme for the season. This is not unexpected. If you cannot spend the salary cap, you cannot expect to be in the top eight. The worry for me yesterday wasn't that the players weren't good enough. It was the fact that the game was won and the players couldn't stop a slide when it happened. Yeah, Lee sacrificed a winger while they got rid of arguably Wakefield's best forward. Very clever. But where were the other Wakefield forwards rallying round for that 10 minutes until Danny Kerman came back? There must have been somebody there on the field who said, we're still winning this game. It's ours to lose. What we need to do is to be playing it at their end of the field. We're surrendering possession virtually every time we touch the ball. Now, there are very experienced guys playing in that Wakefield team. one of whom, you know, has played at the highest level in Australia, and there are forwards at other clubs who have made names for themselves. None of them in the second half looked like they could turn that game around, and that would be a worry.
Okay, fair enough. It's all about opinions. Let us have yours at RL on RY. More tweets coming in. We'll go through some of those in a moment. Let's move on then. I think we've kicked Wakefield enough. I think Scotty wants to kick him a little bit more, but we'll kick him more later. I want to talk about the Castleford Tigers, well beaten at Hull on Saturday afternoon. Fantastic performance from the Black and Whites. They've had some stick off me on this show as well, but I thought they were very impressive. I mean, if there's a better prop forward at the moment than Mickey Payer in the English game or the British game, I haven't seen him, Scotty. He is absolutely outstanding at the minute.
He's certainly putting the shift in every game, isn't he? And again, whatever coach wants, he wants a level of performance, and the level of performance is consistent. And Mickey Pearce has been doing that, hasn't he? Radford, he's slowly but surely get his best players back. The nucleus of the players are getting that bit of understanding. And so now, as we know, slow start for the Black and Whites, but now hitting a bit of form, the big name players, the big game players who can handle the pressure, looking to put a marker down, they seem to be coming to the fore. And that's why I think, what are they on, a six game?
Six out of seven.
Yeah, six out of seven, you know, game run now. So yeah, they're doing okay, but one thing for sure, Radders won't get over complacent, won't get over excited about it, because at the end of the day, what are we in now, 13 games of the season, the quarter final of the Challenge Cup, it will be getting carried away. He'll just take it week by, an old cliche, we'll take it week by week. But yeah, his big game players are certainly are standing up and handling the pressure.
So you were there, 16-14, could have gone either way. Hull's presumably experienced players, their forwards, their playmakers did exactly what Wakefield's players didn't do, I suggest.
I would suggest Castleford were awful for 20 minutes, 16-0 down. I said to Scoy, they caught the kick off. Oliver Holmes got driven 10 yards back into his own in goal. They got a fortunate penalty, Cass. James Tyler thought incorrect decision. Kicked in the touch, dropped it first tackle. Hull had a possession, lost it. Cass got it, dropped it first tackle again, then Hull scored. So that was it. It typified the start to the game. They were absolutely awful, Castleford. They got back into it. They brought Finn on off the bench. I thought that made a big impact for the Tigers. Andy Lynch was outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. He went off, to my recollection, at 16-14. And they might as well have gone off with him, because once he went off, that were it. They were awful.
But what did Hull do to control that game?
They didn't panic. They didn't panic. And for all we give, you know, Leon Price, is he all what everyone makes him out to be? He made one great run when the game was in the balance.
And what was the kicking game like?
It was all right. It was all right.
But did they play where they needed to play to control the game?
Yeah, they did.
Did Gareth Ellis play well?
No, because he went off after about 20 minutes.
Right.
So he didn't. But Payer, I've seen Hull three times in the last month. I know Payer's been suspended in between, but them two players are the best. If you're picking an England team right now, I know Payer can't play, but if you were picking a Super League team now, those two would be in the 17 without a shadow.
But in terms of reputation, is it any different to some of the guys who are playing for Wakefield at the moment? In terms of their standing in the sport?
What, from a Hull perspective or from a Cass perspective?
I think if we're comparing like with like, you're looking at those two respective squads, what Hull did to win that game and what Wakefield have got at their disposal, which is not that different in makeup and experience and standing in the sport to Hull's pack. There's something that you can compare and contrast there.
No, I would compare Castleford to Wakefield, because when the going got tough, Castleford jacked in. They switched off. They didn't want to know. Hull were all right. Hull weren't as good for me as Lee were in coming from behind to beat Wakefield on Sunday. But Hull did what they had to do. And once they got in front, to be fair, they never looked like losing. There's more. The thing is, from a Hull perspective, there's more to come, I think. And I was critical as anyone. I thought they're destined for bottom four. But for me, on Saturday, there's more to come out of that team. There's a bit of belief now. Playing some nice rugby, they're attacking. Jordan Rankin played well at fullback, really got stuck in, attacking the line.
Well, again, is that a brave decision by the coach to drop Jamie Shaw and persist with Jordan Rankin?
Well, we'll see.
Radio Yorkshire, your home of rugby league on DAB, online via the TuneIn app.
Welcome back to Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire at RL on RY. I need
listeners to tweet in, actually, because I'm getting some grief in the studio off Scully. Because he says that I pick Wakefield as our double up forfeit bet. You are wrong, Schofield. You are wrong. You've
Mark
been
Wilson,
too many Peronis.
Mark Wilson.
Mark Wilson,
why, after what I've said about Wakefield over the last two or three weeks, why would I want to take Wakefield in any game of rugby league?
You give me the pick, and I pick Lee.
At this moment in time, and we've just had the debate off air with our referee here in the studio, and Mr. Phil Kaplan, and Mr. Phil Kaplan says he fought... And there's no more honest man than Phil Kaplan.
Yeah, but he couldn't see over the desk. He couldn't see we're talking.
There's no more honest man than Phil Kaplan. And he says, yes, Mark Wilson, I thought 95% that you had Wakefield. Rest my case. We're going to a famous restaurant next Monday night after the show. There's your forfeit, Mr.
Wilson. There's more
passion. No more argument or debate.
There's more passion here than there was on the field at Wakefield.
I'll tell you what it is, right? I'm going to get the audio that proves you wrong. And you'll be paying for his tea because he's coming with us. Right? That's it. And Rich can come as well. Enough for that. By the way, we've got 7 live commentaries this weekend. Just 7, you know. We are live on Thursday, Castleford against Huddersfield. On Friday, we're at Headingley, Leeds against Hull KR. And then on Saturday and Sunday, Rich and I are off on a Jolly Boys out into Blackpool. I think you're coming on Sunday, Scoy, aren't you?
Well, I'm there for all the weekend, but yes, I'll be joining the radio on the Sunday. So if I'm a little bit croaky voiced, it might be the a little bit of wind in Blackpool, or maybe cider. But anyway,
please drink responsibly.
I'm hoping the sponsors can, you know, send us some.
All right, be nice.
Maybe. Yeah,
what are you saying anyway? Are you anywhere nice?
On the beach, I think.
On the beach.
Rich is booked it. I'm not being critical.
Hey, listen. Hey, listen.
There's about 30,000 hotels in Blackpool. I've got a feeling I'm going to be in one of the dodgiest guys.
Don't you be getting them speedos on that Blackpool beach, because you'll be getting clubbed, which we always plan at the moment, Mr. Wilson.
Just be very careful they're not nylon sheets. That's
but
all
I must say, I'm staying at a good friend of mine, Gary Cannell. Can you remember Gary Cannell?
Can you get us a room?
I'll give him a call tomorrow. It's Gary Cannell, prop forward, good prop forward for Castleford. He's got a lovely bed and breakfast at the owner in Blackpool, so that's where I'm staying this weekend.
If you can get us.
So a nice plug, Gary. Just drop the rates a little bit, mate, if you don't mind. So you're going on the beach, eh, on this weekend?
What's that way? I've got a tent. Well, I think Rich has.
He looks nice on these pictures, I'm showing you.
Don't be lying on the beach anyway, you'll be getting clubbed.
He does actually look quite good. Anyway, we've got to move on. We've got serious issues to talk about now, because we're going to talk about refereeing. And last weekend before, I watched the junior game of rugby league at Fryston. So very, very promising, I think, young referee. Goes by the name of Doug Martin. 14 years of age, fellas. One of the best refereeing performances I've seen. We spend a lot of time on a Monday getting stuck into referees. Sometimes right, sometimes we're wrong. And as we've heard, coaches, you know, they pull referees up and then have to quite often apologise that maybe the referee did get things right. How important is it, Phil, in our great game, that we do have young kids that want to be referees?
Absolutely essential. And I would say the unsung hero of the weekend was Jonathan Roberts, who came on at half time at Headingley, touch judge from Batley, part of the Leeds and District Society. He's only ever refereed League One fixtures, and he's only just started doing that, recently qualified as a Grade One. To not only have your first Super League game between Leeds and Huddersfield, two teams that in the two league fixtures that we'd seen between them, you know, no love lost, and always like to be close affairs. As it turned out, it wasn't, but at half time we didn't know that. It was exactly the same scenario we've seen in the previous two league games. But also debuting on national television, you know, and actually he was absolutely superb. Just the right note, his signals were clear, his decisions were clear. I have absolutely no problem with him going to the screen to check something that looked painfully obvious, on the basis of the fact that there was no way he was going to take responsibility at that level if he'd got it wrong. But again, he went for all the right reasons, and I don't think anybody in the ground minded that. He said he had a lot of cooperation from the players. They knew that obviously he was a novice, which says a lot about rugby league players, and we should congratulate them. But he was great, and you suddenly thought, well, actually, yeah, we spent a lot of time saying there's six games every week and we've got five full-time referees now. How are we going to manage this situation? We're going to manage it by 14-year-old kids wanting to be referees and giving them the respect they deserve for making that decision.
It was. I was really impressed, Scully. He takes some bottle, doesn't he? We're going to hear from him in a minute, from Doug, and his dad as well, Dave. It takes some bottle, doesn't it, to want to become a referee, Scully?
Oh, yeah, it does. You know, the reckon, well, you've only got one brain cell if you want to be a referee of any sport, you really. But, yeah, it takes courage and it takes commitment from there. And, yeah, full credit to them. But as long as they do the job properly, you know, and as we know, we're all at times critical of referees from an on-ego point of view, and at times, you know, some of them think they're the part of the game, some of them want to be part of the game, but they're not. And the best referees are the referees who aren't seen, who do the job what they're there to do, give the right calls, and don't make a song and dance about it. So, yeah, this young kid who you just mentioned...
Seriously, mate, he was impressive.
He seems to enjoy what he does, and hopefully, from a point of view, we official him, is that... he does it in the right way, doesn't get a little bit too carried away with the situation, and he enjoys what he does, because he will, as we all know, they all get plenty of stick, don't they? But if he referees for what he sees, then he'll go a long way in the game.
He will indeed. Let's hear then, interviewing him, he's part of the Castleford and Featherstone Refereeing Society. Let's hear what he had to say. This is Doug Martin. Bear in mind, only 14 years of age.
Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson.
Right, OK. First question, how do you become a Rugby League referee?
You sign up on the RFL website to do a course, and once you've actually done that course, you become a referee, so... And then you just go down to your local society.
Why did you want to become a referee?
I started playing rugby when I was six, but when I was 12, I got hit by a bus. I fractured my skull. And then I just wanted to stay in rugby as much as I could. I realised I couldn't play it anymore, so I just decided to become a referee.
And how old are you now?
I'm 14.
14, so you've been doing it for...
This is my second season now.
You're obviously very good at what you do. I've only seen you referee a game once, but I see a lot of rugby league and I see a lot of referees, and I was impressed by what I saw, by the way that you handled the game. How is it being a referee? How do the guys on the pitch... Have you refereed games where you know some of the guys that you're refereeing?
I've refed some local teams around here, so I know a few other players, but I just treat it like a normal game, be loud, confident, clear.
Not many people that have the bravery to become a referee, because let's be fair, referees get quite a lot of stick when, you know, from people like me in the media to fans on the terrace to the players. It's not an easy job, is it? What do you most like about being a referee?
Just being in control of players. I mean, like, I've loved rugby league for a while and I just wanted to keep going as much as I can with it.
Being a referee, it is a difficult job. I guess it hasn't been plain sailing for you. I guess there's been some tough times along the way as well.
Yeah, there's tough times where you'll get teams which are against you or some which are for you, whether they like it or not. End of day, you're in charge or you need to try and control.
And what help and support do you get, not only from your parents, but what help and support do you get from the RFL then? Because I see you coming, and one of the things I like, I watch a little, my son plays football. I see a referee turns up with a tracksuit on, or one of the dads will have a go at doing it. I see you come with your full RFL gear on, and obviously it makes you look smart, it makes you look as though you're part of the RFL team. What help do they give you?
They'll just supply the kit to you. Like, you've got a lot of training sessions, whereas it's working on fitness or communication, and then you go to your society, and then you'll watch videos, and then you'll just, like, constructive criticism, I suppose, so it just helps you out that way, and that's how you build up.
And when you first got into it, what was it like when you first got your first... Who was your first game? Where did you do that?
It was an under-8s game at Brotherton. Nerves were above and beyond me, but it was just... Once I stepped onto that field, I had the job, and I knew I needed to do well, which I did.
Do you ever worry that you might have got something wrong when you're refereeing?
Yeah, it happens. Most games, you're always going to make the odd mistake, but you just have to put it behind you. It's how you bounce back from that.
Yeah, and just put that out of your mind and forget it. It's one of them things. Everyone makes mistakes, don't they?
Yeah, it's just one of them things what you have to cope with.
What's it like when you get the feedback then from the games that you've done? Does someone come and watch you at times, or how does that work?
Sometimes there's people which come and watch you, but most of the time the game's actually recorded, so you get the DVD and then you'll watch it back. And sometimes you can send that in to your society to for them to have a look at.
And what's it like watching yourself back on the thing? Do you look back thinking, well, shouldn't have done that? Or is it just, oh, actually, I did get that right, or whatever?
Yeah, it's just about seeing where you can improve and what you've done wrong, but what you've done well. So it's just positive feedback.
So what does the future, what is your ambition? What do you want to achieve out of all this?
I'd love to get to the highest level of Super League or NRL, so just have to keep pushing myself hard.
And what's the pathway for you then? How does that work? I saw you the other day, I think it was an under-13s game that you did. Will you get increasing age groups as you go along, or how does it work?
Yeah, the fixture secretary should get in touch with you, and then he gives you the games, and now I'm starting to move up in age groups, and when you come 15, you actually get RFL appointments. So I'm looking forward to that because I could be going around the country at that point.
Okay, you need a lot of support from your family, obviously, to do this. How important is that to you?
Very important. They've always helped me with everything I've done. They've always been there for me.
Dad, I guess it's quite... I mean, well, what's your opinion on what your son's doing at the moment?
I'm very impressed with his attitude when he gets on the pitch. You're saying he blanks everything out. So typically in an average game, there's a 50% of the crowd will always be against you. When he walks on the pitch, he just commands the pitch and just forgets what's happening on the crowd. I think I get more annoyed and upset by the comments that are being thrown. And that's a little bit disappointing because a lot of parents forget that there's still young kids learning their trade. They're not playing, but they're actually learning. Without match officials, you've not got a game. So if some parents just realise that it's not right to abuse a young official, then you might find some will stay with the game and actually move into being proper referees in the Championship and hopefully Super League as well. So, but very proud of what he does when he gets on that pitch as well.
Have you had some difficult moments, like you said, you're at games and the refs do get stick, don't they? Unfortunately, it's part of the game. It shouldn't be, but it is.
It is, and difficult moments, yes, but as a parent of a match official, you just bite your tongue and let it go over your head because you can't confront it. You know, there's touchline managers there that should be managing the supporters and the coaches, for that matter. And if they had done their job a little bit better, then there wouldn't be as much abuse to match officials. But it's part of the course. There's always going to be 50% of the supporters don't like the decision you make and 50% love it. So it's a case of just ignoring it as a parent and giving them the support that he needs when he needs it.
What did you think when he said, look, Dad, I think I might become a referee or I'd like to do it? What was your thought on that?
My view was superb. He's a very confident young man, always has been. The fact that he wanted to stay in the game, when he came to us when he was six and said he wanted to play rugby, as you can tell from my accent, I'm not a local lad for myself, and that was my real introduction to rugby league when Duke started playing. So from that side, I was delighted that he wanted to stay in it rather than just abandon it and go and do something different like football or whatever. So I was proud that he wanted to continue with it.
Do you get nervous when you go to a game?
I do. He doesn't, but I do. It's just a case of getting that first whistle blown when he takes control of the pitch, and then the end of the match doesn't end when the last whistle goes. It's when he leaves the stadium, the arena. That's so up until that point. Yeah, there's always that little bit of nerves of what could potentially go wrong. But he's handled every game so far perfectly well, so happy with that.
What impressed me when I saw you was the way that you spoke to the players. You were very authoritative. You didn't take any stick. You were confident in the decisions that you made. Is that just how you are? Is that you as a person? Or do you change when you become a ref?
No, it's just how I've always been. I've always been confident. Like to talk to players, but as a referee, you don't focus on the spectators. It's just the players on the pitch. You have to control them.
So do you see this as a potential career path for you, becoming we see full-time officials now? Is that what you'd like to do?
Yes, I've since my accident, I've always wanted to become a referee. I've always been interested, so yeah, I'd like to think so.
And is that something that you'll support him in as he goes along?
Definitely would, and if his mum was here, she'd be saying that that's a retirement plan to Australia. So yeah, no, it's the right move. If he decides to change course in a year from now, whatever he decides to do then, we'll still support that. But my honest opinion, I think he's capable of moving to the top. If he keeps at it, works hard, he's got the chance of doing it, and we'll support him every way we possibly can to get there as well. So.
There you go, Doug Martin, young lad who's setting out on his refereeing career and obviously got a good family behind him and a level-headed young man, and hopefully his ambitions can come true. Phil, it could happen.
Why not?
We might be here in about 10 years' time moaning about Doug's performance at St Helens against Leeds.
At least one of us will be moaning.
Yeah, that might be Scully.
What about referees? Scully?
You all right?
Yeah,
his team lost to a late penalty.
I just thought we'd have some cornettos or some pasta about the place. Make me feel home.
Because of your Italian exploits. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Somebody tweeted whilst this tour was going on that Mr. Schofield had been shown the sites and ruins of Rome, some of the most historic places in the world, and commented, "It's just a bunch of ruins."
Well. I've got something to say about that, because my son went on a trip to America, to California, Las Vegas, Grand Canyon, cost me a small fortune. Asked him about the Grand Canyon when he got home. He says, "You know what, Dad, it was a bit boring, really. It was just a hole in the ground."
Well, it's fair.
It is.
Can't argue with that.
It is.
Sometimes you've just got to say what the sea's going, haven't you?
Absolutely. Well, I say we went sightseeing, and to be honest, and I just said
you
to
must him, have been impressed by the Colosseum.
I just said to him, "Listen, it's like when I was at school, I wasn't very good at geography, I wasn't very good at history, and wasn't really interested in it." And I said, "It's like at science, you know, with a Bunsen burner. Why the hell would I want to turn a Bunsen burner green, yellow, or brown? All I want to do is get a rugby ball in my hand and play a rugby league." So, they understand my philosophy.
Just be quiet.
Feel more at home.
Where's the next tour? Where are you going next?
He's on about Malta, I think.
Oh, yeah. Who told him that? You?
I've been on about Malta, I think.
Got to Cyprus.
Gerard Samet be playing? Is he falling out with Malta?
Gerard Samet does play for Malta, doesn't he? He mentioned Malta, but I also said Portugal. So he said, "Do you like golf, Scott? Is that why he said it?" So I said, "Yeah." So anyway, yeah. So there's a few variations we're on about.
Mm. Yeah.
Is this based on Jamaica? Have got a team.
Spain. Is this based on rugbying or what the facilities are like?
Rugby's the most important factor, but a bit of factor six will be put in the suitcase.
At RL on our people are tuning in Greece. Now, thinking, "What is it? Is it Judith Chalmers? Wish you were here or what?" We've had a lot of tweets coming in at RL on our Y, Rich.
Yeah, Michael is a London fan. He wants Webster to stay so Samet can stay at London. Bradley, I think Samet was great before he came to Wakefield, but he's better than Miller in his opinion. Ian, back onto Webster. He shouldn't be sacked, he should walk. It can't be any worse without him. It's not working between Smith and Miller, says Chris, so why not give him a go? I think Jared Samet, not James Webster. Maybe we'll get Webster on the pitch.
The issue isn't creative players, it's defenders.
Do you know what, as well, again, you know, supporters, right? We all know at times that they're a little bit one-eyed, but not any of the supporters are questioning the commitment or the passion or the enthusiasm of the players. Honestly, please. You know, none of the supporters are blaming the players for performances.
Oh no! Well, they did blame Richie Owen at the start of the season then, because he used to play for Castleford, but because he's played all
well,
right,
that's because he's played for Cass, isn't it? You know, we all know where that comes from. But still,
else.
You know, the supporters are not putting any blame on the players how they are performing. So I'll put it out there to the Wakefield fans: then, are you happy the way the Wakefield players are performing? You must be, because all you're doing is blaming the coach, James Webster.
All right, fair enough. Okay, more tweets coming in.
Yeah, Ian, he feels for Michael Carter and the club. It must make it very hard to get any sponsors to go on board. Ashes need an experienced head, but who want the job? Andy on Hull KR. Certainly unexpected after the 6-0 defeat 2 weeks ago. It's great to see the look on Sean Wynne's face at the end. Since he's not popular with non-Wigan supporters. Michael says, young referee Dougie is a credit to the sport. Good luck to him. Mm-hmm. Rob is a Doncaster fan. Sad to see Cookie go, but we needed to make the right appointment now. Lots of decent guys out there. And Adam is a Cass fan. Absolutely disgusting, the performance on Saturday. We play a lot on Thursday. Huddersfield will do the same. No pride or efforts.
A Castleford fan saying exactly what I'm asking there from Wakefield supporters. Blame your players about pride and effort, commitment. Well done, Cass fan. Well done for being honest.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I think that is fair enough, isn't it? Let's talk. You mentioned Hulk-AR earlier on. I mean, let's be fair. If we had gone round the room doing our predictions last weekend, not one of us would have picked Hull Kingston.
I would have done. Would I fancied him.
Phil?
Mystic's going. Not a chance. Honestly, it is a sensational result, and they forced Wigan into mistakes. They kept it relatively simple. There was the issue of playing the game at Lee, which, you know, helped in some ways because they weren't going back to the ZW Stadium where 2 weeks before they'd suffered that 60-0 defeat. So it's nothing to do with the fact that Wigan can't play at Lee. Of course they can. It's to do with the fact that Hulk-AR were going back to not the scene of the crime. So that must have helped. But again, they just seemed, from the highlights that I saw, just seemed very, very together.
I tell you what, he's got to be leading the Man of Steel, hasn't he, Campese, so far?
What, more than Luke Gayle?
Oh, well, you
hey, Craig's coming on next week, so you better be quiet.
I just thought, I got Craig Harrison. Have you checked Phil Kaplan? Shouldn't Craig Harrison, has he? Eh? No, that's the Arbor Golf Hall. But do you know what? Since that has been put out with Craig Harrison about Luke Gayle, I don't think he's played well, has he, since? You know, but Campese, surely he's got to be the lead of the Man of Steel.
So
is he coming on, Craig, next week, is he?
He is, yeah.
Look forward to a good debate, then. Look forward to a cracking debate.
You're a betting man. Sorry, Phil. You're a betting man, Rich. You didn't have Hull-AR, did you, on the coupon?
No, I thought I was sitting in another radio studio somewhere else thinking, oh, Wigan minus 16. Oh, Lord, on chat. Oh, dear. Didn't go quite according to plan, but great performance from Hull-AR. Had a game plan. Chris Chester said after the game, all down to Willie poaching. They stuck to it, and defensively they were superb.
All down to former Wakefield?
Front runner for the
evening. Yeah, who is at Wakefield on
current
Sunday?
Wakefield resident.
Yes.
Who is at Wakefield?
No,
Mr. Kaplan, do you know something we don't? Have you got an exclusive for us?
No.
Mr. Kaplan, come on.
I was going to ask you about
this exclusive, get it out before half past eight.
Going to Italy. If you were to put the likes of Terry Campese, Josh Mantellato, very important again for Hull-AR, into an Italian national side with some of the domestic guys you saw. Have we got a chance of making Italy a rugby league preserve?
I think without a doubt. Oh, I do, because with this new governing body now, what has been made official by the government, as I mentioned earlier...
You just followed us on Twitter, Scoy. We could be getting the next Jolly Boys out.
Hey, it's not a Jolly Boys. It's taken serious, Mark Wilson.
They want a media manager.
I take the rugby league serious. Don't worry about that. It's not a Jolly Boys.
What did you say? Anyway. Peroni's pizza and what?
Pasta. In that order. Peroni first. I'll have some of that pasta. But yeah, Phil, as I'm saying, this new goody body now, and the access, what that does for them, it allows them, for the talent pool that is all around Italy, and they've got a league structure now, I think there's 10 teams playing in the league, but what it does, it enables them to go into the rugby union community from a point of view where there's 77,000 players who then, from April until October, are going to be given an opportunity to play rugby league, so there is plenty of talent out there.
I know that one of the issues with the gentleman who looked after you, Mr. Gentile, is that he doesn't like imports coming in and just merely playing for Italy and then disappearing. Yeah. But I just think there's a balance to be struck there, that if you, as the Italian national team, can call on the likes of Terry Campese, who played for Italy in one of the Sevens tournaments, and I think, but for injury, possibly would have played in the last World Cup as well. If you've got people of the calibre of Mantellato and they become your iconic players, they don't have to play in Italy. But I think you do need to take into account that if your international team has a high profile, is in a World Cup, it does filter down to the domestic level. There's a balance to be struck
It has to do, because the supporters from there, then, they need to identify the very own, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, and I agree with you, have three or four of them in, but the rest, hopefully, then it's going to be the locals. But as I mentioned to Mark and Richard earlier, there was this idiot who's in charge of the Federation of Italy now, the international team, who's based in Sydney.
Right.
He won't get off his fat backside and go over to Italy and see all this talent there. And do you know what, Phil? And I'm getting involved with Ikram Butt and Barra, and also two going over to Italy to promote one thing. That's our greatest game of rugby league, right? And do you know what the audacity, what he had to say about me over the weekend was? Why is Gary Schofield getting involved in this rebel tour? Well, I find that quite pathetic, because you know a hell of a lot regarding rugby league, International Rugby League European Federation. If he got off his fat backside from Sydney, went to Italy, see exactly how they are trying to promote the greatest game of all, because at the end of the day, all we want is exactly the number one factor, and that is to get our game bigger, our game developed better, our game marketing there, and this guy's having a pop. And at the end of the day, all we wanted to do, from Ikram Butt, from myself, from Chris Green, from the White Ribbon, also to this new Italian setup, is that rugby league is going to be the winner.
I just think we do need to have some top-line players, and that if they don't play in the domestic league, that's not an issue. Virtually all of the Brazilian national football team don't play in Brazil, but it encourages kids in Brazil to want to be the best they can be. And I think if you add the two guys at Hull Car that we've talked about, to possibly Paul Vaughan and Aidan Guerra, who are likely to be playing state of origin and have played at international level for Italy, then you're looking at a team that seriously could be, you know, we need nations from, say, 5 to 8 to become stronger, for the international game to be stronger.
Oh, yes,
Italy could be, from what you've seen of the athletes there, from the work that needs to be done to integrate the stars that that genuinely do have Italian heritage, we could really have a nation here.
I tell you what, I'd say with that pool of players, that now they're going to get over 70,000 players who they can look at there to hopefully bring over to our game and be quite, well, quite strengthened internationally. Hey, let's not forget, Italy beat us in a friendly, beat England, didn't they, before the World Cup, so the
when Italy
players
come over for the return,
they're coming
fixture.
Over, yeah, they're coming over.
Are you going to show them around Belle Isle and show them the delights of Leeds?
Well, if I show them around Belle Isle, they won't be going home. No disrespect to where I come from, by the way, but they won't be going home. If they come over with the Gucci watches and the posh shoes, they certainly won't be going home with them, will they?
Man bag. There's no man bags in Belle Isle.
They certainly won't be... They won't be going on with them, but that's for sure. But anyway.
Okay. Let's get back to the rugby. I swear some people are tuning in and wonder what on earth is going on.
Now, just to say on that, because we was playing for the White Ribbon Trophy, so this is going to be an annual event. So, yes, we will be hosting Italy next year. So, when they come over, you can interview a few of the boys and whatever, and we can have a good
free
time.
Free bar, is it? Free bar?
Oh, you're always wanting free hospitality, Mr. Wilson.
Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire at RL on RY.